Welcome to the debug log number 11. On today's show, we have a supersized interview in store for you. First, we talk to Justin Bailey, the CEO of a brand new company called Fig. And basically what Fig is, it's a curated crowdfunding site dedicated specifically towards games. And the twist is, you can also invest in the games, meaning it's not just where you put money down and you get some milestones. They have that, but they also have an option where you invest real money and you get real money back if the game does well. So that's cool. We'll get into that with him. And the first game they picked for this curated platform is Outer Wilds, the Seamus McNally Grand Prize IGF 2015 winner. So it's very cool. We talked to the guys at Mobius Digital who are making that game, you know, the award-winning game, into a final product with the help of Fig. So it's a really fun interview. It's jam-packed with a lot of great information. We think you guys will enjoy it. So without further ado, this is the Debug Log, episode 11. You're listening to the Debug Log, a podcast about Unity game development. My name's Andrew Curry.
And I'm Obino Para.
And that's it. It's yeah, only two it. People.
A very small crew today.
I'm used to a roll call. We've never done two people, have we?
Seriously? No, we never have. Minimum was like three.
Yeah. We're doing two people tonight because we were the only two people on this interview. The only two people to stay at work and record this interview after hours. Seriously. Tonight's interview you heard in the intro is with Justin Bailey of Fig, a really cool crowdfunding site, and then the guys at Mobius Digital.
So yeah, that was an interesting story how that came about. I remember I was talking to Andrew because one of my friends that on that project that I you know talk about a lot on the show.
Keep teasing it.
Yeah, keep teasing that MMO we're working on. So anyway, someone recommended that we check this this company called Fig out. So I looked into them and I was like, oh, this seems kind of cool. And I sent that link to Andrew and he was like, you know what would be really interesting, Obina, is if we could get these guys on the show.
Yeah, that's the level of just thinking that we passed. We're like, oh, that's cool. It's like, but we have a podcast now. Maybe we could talk to them.
Yeah.
And so I reached out to the Fig people. I was like, I'll talk to Justin because I didn't mention to him that I should have done this when we talked to him. But I know Justin Bailey because he was the COO at Double Fine, a cool game dev studio.
Oh, right, yeah.
San Francisco, who's made like a Broken Age and Massive Chalice and all these great games. But they do all those documentaries, you know, all those cool, like behind the scenes. They've been doing that for the past like 3 or 4 years. And he's just one of the people that work there. It's like, hey, I know you. You're like a little celebrity to me. You know? So that's why it piqued my interest, you know. So. And then I reached out. I was like, hey, we'd love to talk to Justin about this Fig thing. And then their people, their PR people said, hey, you want to talk to the devs at Mobius too? I'm like, yeah, awesome.
Yes.
And we didn't plan for all of them to be on one call, but that's how it happened. And so we
definitely
tried to roll
our
with
hugest,
it.
The biggest interview group we've ever had, which was interesting.
Yeah, so we bounced back and forth between talking to Justin and then talking to them about nerdy dev stuff.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. I really like those guys and talking to them guys. All very experienced and, you know, very well-versed in game development. So it was really cool to get that perspective from those guys.
Yeah, so it's a kind of dual interview, and it's a fun for those biz dev guys out there for also just the...
Biz dev.
Or the nerd guys. Like, it's cool. It's all around cool. So we think you'll enjoy it. So without further ado, we're not going to waste your time. Just kidding.
Yes. Get into it.
Roll it. All right, so today we have, I think it's our record-breaking the most guests. We have four people.
Exactly.
We have some people from Fig and some people from Mobius Digital. So welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You think, starting with Justin, can we just go around the table, across the country, but around the table and introduce yourself and just what your role in the various company is?
Sure, Justin Bailey. I'm the CEO of Fig, former COO of Double Fine, and you know my name's also just happens to be a cheat code. So,
nice. My name is Abhiman Shyam. I'm the producer here at Mobius Digital.
I'm Alex Beecham. I'm the creative director on Outer Wilds here at Mobius.
I'm Logan Verhoef. I've been brought on as an engineer and technical artist and whatever else needs to get done.
Very cool. Very cool. Let's start with you, Justin, just because we found this whole thing because we found Fig. Can you give us just a little bit of an introduction to what Fig is?
Yeah, sure. It's a new crowdfunding platform. It's specific to games. It's curated. We basically do both reward and investment crowdfunding at the same time. I think the investment piece is a little bit new because, you know, now people get to participate financially in the titles that they're helping fund. Small piece right here is that right now it's limited to accredited investors only. And, you know, we have an eye towards very aggressively moving that to unaccredited investors so everybody, including the fans, can invest in titles in the near future.
Yeah, I really like the concept behind Fig in that, you know, each of the platform is very curated for the games that you guys bring on. I know you guys are just working with a single game right now. So what made you guys think about, I guess, curating this platform and having it just like a single game at a time or very limited amount of games at a time?
We looked at Kickstarter and there's a few myths that happen with it. One big one is that if you look at, you know, you always hear about the great successes. You never hear about the failures. And so, you know, we had a lot of developers coming to us. This is when I was at Double Fine, and we were working very closely with both InXile and Obsidian. And these developers would come to us and they'd be like, man, this is awesome. We can go crowdfund and we're at least going to get $100,000. And usually they'd be like, you know, hey, we had a small mention in IGN, so we think that'll translate to at least $100,000. I'm sure, you know, maybe even more than that. And so we'd see that and we'd be like, well, guys, you don't understand. Like the crowdfunding, like Kickstarter right now is just a place to organize your community. You have to bring your, like, a community you already have, and you basically will bring, like, 97% of the traffic will be because of you and your game. And so we thought it was really important to go ahead and curate because we noticed that the titles that were actually becoming successful were ones that had developed relationships with us over many years, and we'd talked to them, and so we could almost, like, be predictive about not only the ones that would be successful funding, but the ones that would actually be successful in great games. So, you know, we saw one that wasn't even a game. It was called Goldieblocks that we helped get going. They did a Super Bowl commercial a couple years ago. Another one that was a game that we just, you know, Yacht Club Games came to us and got advice, and we saw Darkest Dungeon. And we just were like, there's a pattern here. There's some really amazing developers who, you know, have their communities built, and you know, we already are helping them to be successful. So let's just go ahead and formalize this.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So yeah, definitely not targeted for, I guess, the smaller dev, smaller indie dev out there. Or is it just, I mean, how do you guys curate? Is it about, you know, team size, or is it just about the quality of the game?
It is for small teams. They're going to be some ones that come out in the future. They're going to be like one person teams.
Okay.
And the idea is to have both, to have, you know, something that's being used by the larger crowdfunding campaigns, larger developers like Double Fine and Obsidian, but also to have at the same time a small kind of unknown indie. So, you know, the hope is that they can draft off each other and the indie can actually become discovered and find their community if they didn't already have one.
Gotcha.
Do you plan it always to keep it as the one game, or what's going to be the selection pool in the future?
No, it's going to be two games. The one thing we have right now is it's the unaccredited investing piece. Like, up at, it's kind of like legal. I'm not sure how exciting it is, but what had happened is... So we thought that we could only get unaccredited investment involved on the bigger titles. And then we found out a way so that we can actually open it up to not just the big titles, but the small titles. And so right now, you know, the big titles, they want to wait until everybody can get involved. But in the future, you know, we will have this cadence of, you know, big titles and small titles at the same time.
So very cool. So let's transition over to the Mobius guys. Not falling asleep in there. Just to transition, what made you pick Outer Wilds as the first game to launch this thing?
I met with Alex at GDC. He showed me a demo of the game. I got my hands on it, and like instantly, I was just like, you know, this is really. It has like Majora's Mask, and it was like it also had, you know, Mario 64 kind of feel to it. Not Mario 64. Sorry, Mario Galaxy. and had this like exploration element to it. I mean, obviously it was a very well-designed game. It was a lot of fun, and I thought it was like a nerd bullet to the brain. And so, you know, it was just like, hey, this game has amazing promise, and love to help get it funded.
Very cool. So maybe Alex, can you just start give us a little introduction to the game? Elevator pitch, longer elevator pitch.
Sure. Outer Wilds is a space exploration game, and we kind of have this camping meets NASA aesthetic going on in this world. And so you're part of this small space program, and you blast off, and you explore this smaller solar system of miniature planets that change over the course of 20 minutes. And then and it turns out you're caught in this time loop, and sort of your goal is to kind of just explore the solar system where things are all changing over time, all this crazy stuff's happening, and kind of just search for answers to what is going on.
Yeah, it's very cool. We've had a chance to play around with it a little bit, but we also read your thesis.
Yes. It was very interesting.
we're game design nerds,
yeah,
all of us.
Exactly. So. After reading the thesis, it's like you're really more, inspired to actually check out the game even more. Like, oh, how does this work exactly? And how can I get into this? So it was really cool to read the thesis.
No, I'm glad someone read it.
this is the game developer show.
Exactly.
That's what we are.
So. Well, speaking of the design of the game, and you are the lead designer on this game. Could you explain to some of our listeners who may not know what the role of a designer is in game development? Like, what is your role? What was your role in Outer Wilds?
Sure. Well, with Outer Wilds, because it started as my master's thesis. It started with. Coming up with the world, it started out really kind of coming up with, what did we want to kind of achieve just with the design of this game? It started out as much more of like, a space exploration game that really focused on kind of the spirit of space exploration. Kind of, it doesn't have like trading or like combat or anything like that. It's really about curiosity and going out and finding new things. And then we also decided to kind of wrap in this sort of, what would it be like? What would it be like to explore a world where everything is constantly changing? And sort of the role as a designer was sort of like, okay, so what are some actual mechanics? I mean, those are like lofty goals, sure, right. But like, what are some actual mechanics that we could come up with to sort of like facilitate, kind of these larger goals? And like, just for example, so like, we came up with like, one of the big mechanics in the game right now is like this probe launcher, and so you like throw this probe out. Almost like an extension of yourself, and you can take pictures that, and some whatever shows up in these pictures, you might not be able to see it from where you are, but it makes you curious, and you're like, oh, what is that? I'm going to go, check that thing out. And it kind of feeds back into this loop of the player sees a thing, wants to know more about it, and goes to investigate. Hmm. And sort of the whole game was kind of, designed like that. So I guess to answer the question more directly is the designer, we have these sort of We craft mechanics and sort of like this world and systems in the world to try to create like a specific like emotional experience for the player.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it in your thesis. You talk about curiosity driven exploration, and I love the idea, the curiosities idea, and then having the points of interest attached to those. That's a neat. That's a real crunchy game design thing. So getting into that, I like the idea too. As being developers, it blew us away. This whole idea of the Newtonian. Gravity system in this, this little mini galaxy or universe. How did you approach that actually starting to create? Did you develop the first the alpha of this, or who did you have to help you?
So this was developed over the course of my final year at USC, and we had a team of students, some people from the Viterbi School of Engineering helping out with some of the coding, people just we worked with some external art schools. So we had a small team for a year, essentially, on this.
So you got to approach them and go, okay, guys, I want you to simulate the entire galaxy. Don't worry about it.
Actually, the physics simulation, yeah. I actually wrote the summer prior.
Oh, there you go.
And it kind of started the year before with me just kind of poking. The whole thing started essentially as, hey, can I do Mario Galaxy physics in Unity? Right. And then once that was set up, it's like, oh, what if we tried to make the planets actually move? Can we get away with that? And it turned out, shockingly, we could. And it sort of snowballed.
One of the things I think is really funny is, Alex is the lead designer, and you ask him about what it is to be a designer, but he was also the lead engineer for pretty much the whole project.
Right.
And so one of the big benefits of being here now at Mobius is that we actually have multiple people dedicating all of their time to making the game. So actually a big part of pre-production has been getting the game out of Alex's head and into other people's hands and machines, which is, you know, it's existed in his head for so long, and now it has to exist, like, in Logan's and our other engineers and our artists and all these other people's heads as well, which is, you know, a funny thing.
That's interesting. So, like, planning that, I can imagine, like, planning that out and getting all that, extracting the information from Alex is, like, a lot of meetings.
Oh my god, so many meetings.
It's a lot of Alex staring into the distance thoughtfully.
Happens less than five. Yes, that happens.
I'm actually curious about your transition from, you know, after graduating from USC, Alex, and moving. I know you went to Microsoft after that. What happened to, you know, Outer Wilds in that period of time? Were you continuously working on it, or it was like something?
Yeah, it was one of those things. Like, I mean, a few of us continued kind of working in our spare time, you know, moonlighting essentially. I was at Microsoft for 7 months. And then even after coming back to Mobius, or coming back to LA to work at Mobius, you know, for a while we were working on other projects. So it was just, you know, it's kind of that side thing you poke at.
Mm-hmm. So what made you decide it was time to submit it, or had you been submitting it to IGF?
We actually submitted, I'm trying to think, we submitted to student IGF in 2014 and did not get in. And so we were rather surprised when the build we submitted in 2015 was just was extremely similar.
Right.
Not a whole lot was different because we were working on it in our spare time. And then, you know, to get in was, and then to win was just like, what? Okay. I mean, it was great, but
just had better judges, I guess.
Yeah.
Just like that. I don't. Okay, but I mean, that was great. But yeah, no, we submitted every year.
Very cool. Yeah, I like the. This is one little. I like those tidbit I read from the thesis where a design idea where you said that once you made the physics system, it like moved toward entropy after too long, it would not sustain itself. But you're like, oh yeah, we.
Yeah, no, it's a funny thing. It's like we have that 20-minute time loop, and it's like people assume it's like, oh, because you want to do like scheduling, like Majora's Mask, and it's like, Well, no, it's like one. It's mostly so we can get away with all the physics stuff we're doing. It doesn't stay stable for, you know, forever, and we can, of course, we have like planets fall apart, and then it's like, well, it'd be kind of boring if, you know, they fell apart, and then that was just the game, and now you can explore rubble.
Yeah, the evolution of those design ideas is always fascinating to me. The game's always been made in Unity, right?
Yeah, it has.
So what made you pick Unity at the beginning? Is that what you were?
I was familiar with it. And like I said, it started out as sort of before it was essentially Outer Wilds, back when it was kind of essentially, you know, kind of a tech demo with a bunch of prototypes built in it. I was just playing around with Planetary, you know, what we could and couldn't get away with, essentially. And once it became apparent that, oh my god, we can actually simulate the solar system of things that are actually moving, it sort of, you know, kind of took off.
I think especially back then, Unity was the easiest engine to get for free or for a student license.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
There's definitely been a race to the bottom with Unreal and Unity since then, but
right.
When we everybody here was a part of the USC program, and so Unity was pretty prevalent there just because of that access.
Yeah,
and it's also very quick to get stuff up and running and prototyped, which was a big part of what Alex sort of put together, like all these different.
And it's weird, the USC program, right?
Yeah,
they were very rapid prototyping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking of that, like that, we on our show, it's Unity, but we talk about all sorts of games and game development and stuff, but. A lot of times it's sharing. We've talked to a lot of developers and sharing some particular challenges. What are some bigger challenges that the engine kind of presented to you guys?
Especially
in development?
Using all the physics and stuff.
you want to spearhead that one?
Well, I think first we have to start with the story of how long it took you.
That's
to get,
fair.
Like,
yeah, the way the game runs now took. Like probably a year before all the kinks were worked out. Just because you're really not supposed to be doing what we're doing.
Yeah.
You're usually when you do this kind of stuff, you kind of fake it. You know, the background's moving, but you're not really. But in Outer Wilds, it's like that planet you're on is actually rotating.
Right.
And things are moving around at very high speeds. And, you know, just getting it so like it doesn't feel like that, you know, where things feel stable. It's like if you didn't know that was happening, you wouldn't necessarily notice it. That took a while, and then more recently.
Yeah, so we've been looking at the transition to Unity 5, and there's a lot of cool stuff in it, but one of the things they lost when they switched over to the new PhysX engine is the ability to have concave rigid bodies. which is basically everything in our game. And when you consider, like, you know, every single object, the planets, you know, things on them, are actually being run by the physics engine in Unity. Like, we just apply, you know, gravity force to keep them in orbit, an initial push, and, you know, get the player walking around on it. We've been putting a lot of work into getting that back up and running. We've had some success with that, but we're still, like, back at some little issues that are like, okay, the player is sliding around on the surface of the planet again. This showed up, you know, in early work in Unity 4 when the game was first being made. You know, let's figure out why it's happening again, go back to square one, hopefully that works out everything along the way. But yeah, so that is a fun challenge. And we'll see how that goes.
Yep.
Cool. And also, speaking of, like, the transition from Unity 4 to 5, you know, with the UI, what UI were you using for those interactions with the different objects in the scene and in the game world? Were you using the default Unity UI or something else?
It was a mix. Some of the bad parts of that, the old UI of, like, that was kind of temp, were done in, like, you know, the Unity, the build, like, the old Unity GUI system. Right. Most of the player HUD was actually, we had, like, 3D planes floating in front of the camera.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that carrying on to the new UI?
It sounds like with the new one, we can just use the new one to do the same
thing. Yeah. I'm actually pretty excited to redo the user interface using the new system, just because it's a lot cleaner, a lot faster to iterate. It's faster. There's just a lot of reasons to use it now.
We want to give a much better sense that you're, like, actually wearing, like, a helmet for, you know.
Oh, cool, yeah.
Because right now, you know, the version, like, the alpha version, it's very much like we just plaster these things on the screen. But, yeah, we want to make it feel like you're actually, you know, you're embodied in that suit.
Very cool. That actually brings into question, like, the thought of virtual reality. Like, would you guys consider using, like, maybe the Oculus Rift or the SoundSong?
Proceed with caution.
Yeah, it's super cool in very specific instances. So many things spin.
Yeah, I just think about that scene in Gravity when they go out spacewalking for the first time and Sandra Bullock is getting super sick. Mm-hmm. Like, that's actually what it would feel like to have this game in VR.
It's extremely realistic.
That's true.
Worst case, because, like, you're going to be floating around in space and then bump into something and then all of a sudden moving without player input.
I think it's one of those things that people will think they want until they have it. And then you're just like, oh, Lord.
And then they're throwing out.
Having done a few VR projects in Unity and other platforms, it is, you have to be very careful to design around player movement. And it would be very cool to have VR for Outer Wilds, but it's something that is still an upcoming challenging conversation.
Yeah, I guess that's something. Being, like, being able to shift perspective in space instantly is not that great for the stomach either.
Yeah. Be cool. One other thing that I was thinking that Logan is working on a lot this week is, so part of the issue is that everything in the game is in the same scene, same Unity scene.
Yeah, so it's just like the solar system's all in one scene together.
Oh, weird. Interesting.
Well, you know, because everything has to run at the
right,
same time.
Right.
Because, as Alex likes to say, it's a narrative game locked inside an astrophysics simulation. And, you know, as for anybody who's ever had to, you know, work on the same scene with multiple people, you know how much of a challenge that can be and how much you can accidentally overwrite stuff. So Logan is in the process of splitting that scene into multiple scenes so people can work on specific planets and do level design.
Yeah.
So we're in the mid of a phase of pre-production right now. One of the things we're looking at is splitting up the world. And that's been a lot of going through the code and figuring out all these dependency order things because, you know, stuff will try to set something up and fail to find another planet and then start, you know, puking everywhere. So it's been a lot of going through every single script in the game, which has been great to learn how it works. It's almost to the point where we all have our, like, isolated little planets, and then you hit play on that one planet scene and it'll, like, actually, like, throw the sun in the scene and put the planet in orbit and pop the player in if they're not there and do all this other stuff.
which I'm wildly excited for because it was getting pretty ridiculous by the end of it, where like I'd just be afraid to do anything. It's like while I was editing Brutal Hall, it's like, oops, I moved something in Dark Ramble, which, you know, you wouldn't find until like 2 months later during like a festival. Yeah. Because you just, it's hard to check every, you know, to make sure you didn't, when something changes, it's like, well, unless you go there, you're not going to notice.
Yeah.
That's interesting too, for this new, now that you guys are working on it at Mobius, is there an like additional content besides just polishing it? And are there other planets you're adding to this whole system or anything?
Like that? Planets, I wonder. So the alpha, the version that we had in IGF was not complete, like content-wise even. And so a lot of what we're doing is kind of, is finishing, I mean, it's a combination of finishing all of the content that was always going to be there. In the process of that, we've been having like design meetings. A lot of new stuff has kind of come up, you know. A lot of it is working with existing locations. We are adding a few new locations.
Yeah, imagine that as you go full
time. I'm going to say this in a lot more of a sexy way. Alex likes to be either way too. Anyway, yes, we're adding a ton more content to the game.
Yeah, thank you.
That's the sales. That's the sales.
It doesn't matter. There are definitely going to be new locations to explore. There's going to be like all the questions that people initially have from exploring the game. Those will all have answers. So, you know, from
the
what
game will end.
Yeah, the game
it will have an ending.
Yeah. So, you know, to that regard, you know, not even halfway, you know, there in terms of what the alpha is to where it's going to go.
Yeah.
In terms of full content, full experience. We're also like totally changing all of the art in the game, you know, all of the geometry, all new art style.
All the writing's getting updated.
Yeah. So, yes, it's, you know, building off of this.
Sorry, it'll be massive. Yes, we're adding
massive
so
changes.
Much. 20 planets.
20 new planets.
This is the reason I'm sitting in this meeting.
Explosions everywhere.
This is why he's sitting.
Someone
had oversight.
It's not necessarily about, like, how many planets we're adding. It's also like we're going back to existing planets and adding a lot more.
That's what I was trying to. It's all about fleshing out sort of the narrative. It's all about the curiosity study. You guys read the thesis. It's all about all of those POIs, all of those existing, us testing all of those point to areas, and they tell a much more interesting story instead of right now. I think it's like what you like. You land on a planet and you walk up and you like find essentially an alien signpost and you read it and it says something cryptic.
Yeah, you can go down a rabbit hole without environmental storytelling. Let's put a thing there and a receipt on the table and all.
So it'll be a lot more of that kind of stuff, but in a way that is still very, you know, is very leading players to telling players about other places that actually exist in the game, much the way it does now.
Yeah, and I think it's really about building off of what's already existed. You know, even if we're getting down to like the tech and the scripting and all of that stuff, you know, and the systems, like Alex and Luan have plans for how, you know, the probe system will be revised or the telescope system will be revised from a design and technical standpoint. But that doesn't mean that we're like, you know, erasing and starting from scratch. So it's taking what we already have, this really solid base, and then, you know, making it into the game that it needs to be.
Yeah, we're actually in a really good position having what Alex made prior going into this, because so much of the game is figured out and understood, and now it's just really making it a lot meatier.
Yes, that's very cool. Speaking of making it meatier and adding, you know, fleshing out the game, I'm curious how big your team is, you know, with artists and engineers and stuff like that.
Sure. We have 7 full-time people here in the office, and we have our sound designer / composer and our writer who are remote but have been with the project since its inception. So we have a couple of engineers, a couple of designers, a couple of artists. My role is the producer catch-all, and then the writer and the sound designer working remotely. And we'll probably, throughout the production cycle, be bringing in some additional contracted modelers and animators to get that done. But probably nothing more than that.
Gotcha. That's cool. And I guess a segue is a little bit, you know, I was curious. We actually have a group on Facebook that a lot, one of the questions they asked yesterday was the sort of dev tools that we use and version control systems that we use to do our personal projects. I'm curious, like, what do you guys use to, you know, keep that workflow and, you know, get that information flow all down? Like, keep it down to, like, tracking issues.
Sure. You want to answer from the engineering side first?
So from the engineering side, coming into the company, even before I joined, I was part of a big conversation about version control and saying there was a lot of worry, like, oh, you know, with Git and games, it pulls down, you know, the entire history to user's machine, so that could just blow up size-wise and be, like, huge pulls. Something like SVN just, you know, doesn't have the it's like great lightweight, but it's it just doesn't have all the tools you need for working with a team. And Alex doesn't like SVN. We were talking about Mercurial as well.
The project was on Mercurial up until quite recently, but that's just from back from when it was a student project.
Yeah. Ultimately, the final decision we made was with Git, and we just sat down. We looked at the size of the project. It was 2 gigs, probably less than that, with the entire assets directory. And we said, all right, you know, we're going to break the scenes up. We're going to do all this other work. Stuff, our biggest assets, which are, if they're iterated on a lot, are going to bloat, are like audio, some textures, and what? Like, not a whole lot else. And if we're just careful about our use of them, so we don't just make one tiny tweak commit, like that could be entirely manageable for several years of development. So that's a current plan moving forward.
I'll tell you, if somebody, Justin, you made the game-centric crowdfunding. If you made the game-centric repository system, that could be worth so much money, man.
That sounds sexy, right?
There are some that exist out there, like specifically for projects like this, not necessarily games, but things like it, that the names escape me at the moment. But Git is just also such a well-rounded tool set that everybody just keeps coming back to it. Yeah.
Yeah. And in case your fans are wondering, just from the more rudimentary project management system, we use Trello and Slack.
Oh, Slack is great.
Slack, you know, so those are our main project management tools, and we actually use Google Drive and Google Docs because we're a small team. But as I try to keep the project management as light as possible for the team, and I think they really like it that way, so they don't have to deal with, you know, messy, powerful tools like Jira, which you need to be an expert. You know, you need a tutorial as much for that as you do for Maya. You know, so.
For tools that aren't software, we do stand-ups daily.
Yeah, we do stand-ups.
So that's you know, really great for just making sure a team of this size, you know, knows what's going on, what people are working on, what they need.
We've been making s'mores every other day, so that's
Abhiman has actually been making s'mores.
It's great morale building
Very cool.
Obviously, we're also using Unity. We're using Maya for modeling.
Yeah. That actually might be a point of interest for your followers. We're using Maya LT instead.
Yeah, it's like the indie version of Maya, which is great in most respects. But then there's certain things it doesn't have Python scripting, so you have to do Mel, which is gross. We're trying to figure out sort of like what's our, because the game, the geometries are so complex, a lot of level design and gray boxing is done just in straight Maya, and then kind of, you know, writing, kind of importing scripts in Unity to, you know, kind of try to make it so we can play certain things, do certain level design things in Maya, but then they get translated into Unity in like a very seamless way.
As being developers, you talked about how the deal got made, but from just being developers and in the process of making the game, how does doing a crowdfunding like this change your perspective or what you know, expectations or, you know, what the pressure that you have to finish it in the right way?
You know, it's funny because I think in certain ways crowdfunding and equity funding changes that, and in certain ways, like, as a game maker, we're concentrating on making the game the best possible way for ourselves and for our audience. I think as Justin kind of iterated earlier, things like Fig and crowdfunding really are about organizing your community around the game. And that's one of the ways that Fig has been incredibly valuable to us, because our company didn't really have almost, you know, any, you know, social awareness, so to speak. You know, people weren't really aware that we existed around that time. And we are in a part of LA, even, you know, most of the other game developers on the other side of the city. So being a part of Fig is really being a part of this community and this coalition of studios where people like Tim Schafer and Brian Fargo have not just agreed to be in like our campaign videos, but given us resources, given us advice. And, you know, for us, we're really excited to be a part of that community of game makers and to have those fans and that community be built around us. Mm-hmm. So that's really the big thing that Fig has given us and given us that opportunity, which we're really grateful for.
Awesome. Wow, Aviman, that's awesome. You can like be a spokesperson now. you know, it's exciting to me though too. Is like, you know, there is an investment component to Fig, and some of the people investing are people that are actually other game developers, and it's just really cool to see them get excited about you know, a new property like Outer Wilds. And that's one thing we're excited about, is that it be a platform where people who don't, you know, haven't discovered their communities yet can discover that. And I mean, I think the counterpoint though for like for Mobius and for also Outer Wilds is I think, you know, there is a community out there. It was just like a lot of the formal things doing it to capture that community, to like reach out to them, like they weren't in place. And so you know, we're trying to do what we can to help get the word out. But you know, the actual download, it received like 90,000 people, I think, actually downloaded it. It's just one of those things where like there wasn't a way to capture the emails on it, and that would have been really awesome right now, because you know, we could you know, make sure we're reaching all those people. But
yeah, we definitely have created a fan community just by virtue of our work. You know, there's a wiki out there that we didn't make.
We were in a design meeting the other day, and we were like, I wonder what players perceive this as. And we're like, oh, wait, we should go check the wiki and see what they wrote about it.
Yeah.
It's like, useful.
Yeah, this whole campaign in Fig has been super helpful in just starting to bring this community together. They've been like sort of spread out to a whole bunch of different places, and we're working on getting a forum set up and a whole bunch of other things going, and hopefully we can bring the people who are fans, you know, together to you know, see our work and talk with them, you know, more one-on-one. That's always exciting.
Yeah, that's something people don't think about a lot of times. Like you said, there can be fans out there, but there's no, like, you can buy a game and like, we love it, and they can talk about it in their little groups, but unless there's some kind of way, and in this case a way they can actually contribute to it, which is amazing, that they feel there's some like coalition forms, you know, and that can grow. I'm excited to see how Fig can affect those games going forward with it.
Yeah.
Justin, do you have any plans, like other outside, I mean, I guess it considered under the tag of marketing, but like outreach things or some kind of, where you're going to, I mean, are you relying basically on pitches coming to you, or are you going out there and trying to, you know, look for certain types of games, or what, how does that process work?
You know, we're looking, we do have a pitches at fig.co email, and we have received some through that, and we've actually received, you know, a few interesting ones, which has been really cool. We're generally not going to be very aggressive going out trying to find games. You know, the whole business model around this is that there's an informal network that already exists that we're tapping into. And so, you know, when Tim or Brian or Fergus, and then we have some other advisors coming on too, they see something that they think has promise, or, you know, there's a developer. A lot of these guys have been cultivating relationships with them for years, and they've had ideas that they've been giving feedback to them. When those people get referred to us, then we take a look at the game, and you know, because it became like from a trusted source, it's part of like the kind of informal curation we have going on.
Gotcha. So if someone, you know, doesn't have that, maybe someone to speak on their behalf, like a lone indie developer who says, okay, my game is awesome, they would just go to your website and submit to that pitches.com or .co?
Yeah, so it's pitches@fig.co. And actually, kind of an interesting thing, we haven't figured this out yet, but we were in early conversations a while ago to try to buy fig.com. We noticed that when we launched, their site went down. And I don't think it's gone back up. But anyway, so yeah, that co is a very important part, the fig.co. But yeah, we're looking at every single pitch that comes in. We will evaluate it, and you know the ones that that show promise will get attention from the advisory committee to see if they can be future campaigns on the site.
Is there a sort of formality to that process of your approval, or do you guys get together and talk about it, or is it just a case to case like how like what the relationship is you have with the developer and how much, you know, is it a trust thing, or is there some kind of set, like, we do these things in this order?
Yeah, I mean, it's a formal structure. We have advisory board meetings scheduled all the way through the year and into next year. So we meet periodically, and we do bring up, like, a part of that is bringing up the pipeline of future titles. I do want to stress, it's not just, like, the things that Brian and Fergus and Tim find to be fun, or the things that they're interested in themselves. It's, like, it's teams that they think have promise. You know, a lot of times it's people, sometimes we'll see people that have done successful crowdfunding campaigns before. The real focus is on, you know, quality and ability to deliver.
Very cool. Sounds good.
Very cool. We're excited. We can't wait to see what's coming next.
Yeah, for both the game and the Fig platform is going to be amazing. I think it's really going to shake up the industry as far as game developers and game development goes, so.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we're excited. We're very excited about both too.
So, what's the for the Outer Wilds? What's your guys' timeline? Release timeline?
We're slated to be releasing on PC, Mac, and Linux via Steam in June. That's what we got on the campaign. That doesn't mean that we won't necessarily go.
Yeah, don't mess up.
That's what we're on the hook for. Right. We're really excited to potentially go to other places, other platforms, DRM-free places. But we, you know, our first focus is to get the game out to our backers and to our audience, and then we're excited for potentially taking it to other places. What's interesting about this game is that on the one hand, we've had just a couple months of pre-production, and on the other hand, there's been like 2.5 years of it. So really, like, our production schedule is just making the game, you know, taking all of these planets, putting all of that content in there, you know, and just doing that for 10 months straight. So that is our plan.
Cool, very cool. So I guess to wrap things up, do you guys... You know, anyone from Justin to Logan or to
everyone
who's listening. Any lasting advice to, you know, game devs out there that you would like to leave them with? Like anything that you've learned that they should definitely avoid or definitely do as far as game development or publishing a game or moving forward or, you know, marketing, etc.
I got one that I'll take from our professor, because we're all here from the USC program, and the head of the department, Tracy, she always says, a prototype is worth 1,000 words. So one of the biggest difficulties with having a game idea is actually making it from an idea to a game. Right. So you just actually have to make something. And once you have something, you can get reactions from people in a way that just having words will just can't do.
Yeah, I guess, and then just riffing off of that, and along with, since we've talked so much about the physics of the game, just not letting yourself, don't let whatever tools you choose to make, whatever you want to make, don't let those tools control what you make too much. Like, bend them to your will.
Yeah, and I'll just say, you know, my advice is to connect, to get out in the community and connect. There's, you know, other people that actually refer projects to us are the Indie Fund. So one of their guys actually is the co-founder, Aaron Isaacson, is actually also an advisor on our platform, and he brings like the bigger projects. He'll refer to us. But it's just like, you know, being involved with other game jams, going out there, getting involved in the community, you know, that's going to be so much better, regardless if you use our platform or another platform, just getting that feedback. So, and being part of that.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's some more personal, like, advice, just to, like, people who make games specifically, is that design isn't a job, it isn't a role. It's something you're doing no matter what you're doing at all times, whether you're programming, doing audio, doing level design. Like, it's not like a role on a team. It is something that should be involved in every aspect of it. That's just my two cents.
Yeah, those are all quotable.
Yeah, the soaring music behind
it. Exactly.
Well, that's a good way to end the show. We can't thank you guys enough for coming on. I'm sorry we had technical difficulties at the beginning of this, but we really appreciate the time.
No, thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
cool. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, and we'll keep everybody updated. We'll put all the links in our show notes and stuff, and we'll check back in maybe in the future and see how it went and see how the dev process, and see if you guys have made two more universes by then.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Cool. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks. All right. All right. All right. That was the interview. It was a big, supersized interview, like I told you. I wasn't lying.
I like how you kept putting people to sleep on one end. Like, Justin, go to sleep. Mobius, go to sleep.
It felt weird, though, because, I mean, just really quick, the backstory is we didn't know Justin was going to be on it, so I prepared all these really nerdy dev questions, and we wanted to talk to him initially really bad, and so I was like, oh, crap, we need to talk to both of them. It's like...
Yeah.
Like you paused there for a second, so but it, I think it worked out. They're all super cool. So
yeah, that was good. I mean, what I really loved is the tips at the very end. It's like, here's, you know, this is what you should do as a dev, and when these are the tools that I use. So that's actually another episode we probably should get into another time. Is like what tools people use and
process,
you know, workflows
and stuff,
and process.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we've gotten a couple things about that on the Facebook stuff. But yeah, so just check out fig.co. They actually have, as this is coming out, they have like seven more days, and they're like still $10,000 short. So
yeah,
we need you.
Let's make it happen, yeah.
The debuggers, the loggers.
The TDLers.
TDLers, whatever. The debug heads. You need you to go there.
The debug heads.
And everybody do 1,000, and for the 10 of you, then that would be 10,000. But I'm sure they'll hit it. You know, I'm sure they'll have a final push. This is part of it. And also check out, you know, Alex's thesis. If you're a game designer, I mean, we weren't joking when we talked about it.
That's
it's really
true.
Interesting.
It was really interesting to read. Yes, it was. So definitely check that out.
Yeah. And that can be found. Just search for his name and thesis. It's public where his school is. So anyways.
USC, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Anyway, yes. So, it's for those that want to get in contact with us, definitely reach out to us. You know, if you have questions about Fig, have questions about game design or anything in, or, you know, the Unity game development realm, reach out to us at thedebuglog@gmail.com. And also check out our website at thedebuglog.com. There you'll find our newsletter. And if you register for that, we'll send you a link to our exclusive Facebook group, which is the Debug Lounge, or just send us an email at, I guess the email I just said is thedebuglog@gmail.com, and we'll send you an invite to the lounge. And the lounge, like I said, is growing really rapidly, and you know, there's a lot of good talent, a lot of new people that are, you know, contributing and answering questions and sharing what they're working on. So it's really cool in the lounge. So come on in.
Yeah, we have a lot of interaction happening now, more than I thought to be at this point.
Yeah, agreed. It's really good.
So, very, very, very cool. One last pitch. This is, we're T-minus 1 week for Unite.
Yes.
So, again.
Get excited.
We've been talking all week about doing fun stuff while we're out there, recording an episode while we're out there, maybe starting.
Periscoping.
Periscope. Get with it, Zach.
So,
it's very cool. We're excited. It's, you know, it'll be our Christmas time of the year going to that. It'll be very cool. And we get to meet a lot of new people and maybe get them on the show like this. And so we have more episodes like this.
Yes.
So we can't thank Justin and the guys, Alex and Abhiman and Logan, all those guys from Mobius enough. It was very cool for them to spend a whole hour with us. I was surprised. Yeah. They're like, we have an hour. I was like, awesome. So, thanks again, guys, and...
Yes. Cheers.
Yes. Go support the game. All right. We're done, I think. So, until next time, my name's Andrew.
And I'm Obina.
See you later.
Bye.
Good.
Yeah, did you just tap your chest 3 times?
Yeah.
Hulk smash!